everybody. Welcome to episode 149 of Rain Delay Radio. It's a baseball podcast. First of all, congratulations to the Texas Rangers for winning the 2023 World Series. Pat is going to be talking to Frack later on about that and all things Rangers World Series. But first, he's here to talk to me about the news of the week. How's it going, Pat?
Pretty good. And, you know, keeping things in Arlington, I would like to congratulate the Dallas Cowboys on continuing to be irrelevant. The Eagles are America's team now, baby.
Hey, look, Dak Prescott might win my fantasy week, so
he might, not totally irrelevant. But that's all he's good for.
He had a good week. Who was it? Was it Frack whose strategy this year in fantasy football was Justin Fields and then the defense of whoever's playing against Justin Fields?
Yep. That was the strategy.
Which worked really well until Justin Fields got injured. So. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the news, Pat, and let's start real quick with, actually, I was going to start with the Gold Gloves, but we're still waiting for the final one
to be
announced.
On the finalists.
So the Gold Glove finalists, we didn't actually talk about the finalists. The biggest news there really was that Nolan Arenado wasn't even a finalist for a Gold Glove this year, which is the first time since he entered the league. 10 straight Gold Gloves, wasn't even a finalist this year, which was, you know, not the biggest surprise, but still a big surprise. Like, he still was Nolan Arenado this year. It's just
I didn't realize his defense fell off like that.
It didn't fall off that much. It's just like, it's one of those things where it just wasn't as flashy as it normally is. And it just kind of, like, you know, gets ignored amongst all of the other, like, you know, he just didn't have a great year, and like, cool, he kind of move on from him, you know, who's the next guy. Yeah, that was sort of the big surprise. But the Gold Gloves, let's talk a little about them. Hopefully by the time we're done, we will know who the AL utility winner is, as well as the teams. We're still waiting on those. Although I don't think there's going to be any real surprises there for the teams. AL utility winner actually is announced on MLB.com. It's just not on the Rawlings Twitter yet.
Oh my gosh.
Mauricio Dubon is the winner there. This is interesting, the utility ones, right? Because a number of the utility winners were nominated at other positions, or like were finalists at other positions as well.
Yeah.
And to me, if you can be a finalist at, you know, second base, for example, or shortstop, which I think is where Ha-Seung Kim appeared a lot at second base, and so did Mauricio Dubon, and they both won the utility award.
So it looks like all the awards are out here.
Are they? Unless the team award.
Yeah, that's the only one we're missing, but I'll go through real quick the individual player awards.
Yeah.
So American League, first base, Nathaniel Lowe of the Rangers. Second base, Andrés Giménez of the Guardians. Third base, Matt Chapman of the Blue Jays. Shortstop, and this one's kind of surprising to me. I didn't realize he was this good defensively.
I apologize. I'm mixing up. The team awards are the Silver Slugger. That's not Gold Glove.
Yeah.
That's where I was. I forgot it was one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, the Braves are going to win that one.
Right,
So shortstop, this one shocked me. I didn't realize how good he was defensively. Anthony Volpe of the Yankees got short for the AL. Catcher, Jonah Heim of the Rangers. Pitcher, Jose Berrios of the Blue Jays. Left field, Stephen Kwan of the Guardians. Center field, Kevin Kiermaier of the Blue Jays. Right field, Adolis Garcia of the Rangers. And then Dubon from the Astros, as you mentioned.
Yep.
In the National League, we have Christian Walker of the Diamondbacks for first base. Second base, Nico Hoerner of the Cubs. Stott has been stubbed. Third base, Ke'Bryan Hayes of the Pirates, which I think that's an awesome pick because that dude can field. Shortstop, Dansby Swanson of the Cubs. Good for him. Catcher, Gabriel Moreno of the Diamondbacks. I kind of thought Patrick Bailey was going to get it because he had some sick throws. But, I mean, that's awesome for Moreno. He led the backstops in defensive runs saved to 20 and Statcast caught stealing above average. So that's interesting. Pitcher from the Philadelphia Phillies, Zach Wheeler. Very happy for Wheels. He's the first Gold Glove pitcher for the Phillies since Carlton in 81.
Wow.
Left field, Ian Happ of the Cubs. Center field, Brenton Doyle of the Rockies. This dude has a cannon for an arm. If you've never seen him make a throw to the plate, watch his throw to plate against the Blue Jays on September 2nd. It came in as a 105.7 mile per hour throw. It was incredible. He is incredible. Right field, Fernando Tatis of the Padres, which that's pretty interesting. Considering that, you know, this was his first year in the outfield. And then first utility. Utility, Haesung Kim of the Padres as well. That's all your winners.
Yeah, and I think there's not a lot of huge surprises here. Like you said, Tatis, a little bit of a surprise. Volpe, a bit of a surprise. Ke'Bryan Hayes, again, like, he's a dude who is really, really good at defense and just, like, wasn't getting the accolade because Arenado kept winning, right? And so the one year Arenado doesn't win, Ke'Bryan Hayes gets it. Makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
I'm surprised to see there are three Cubs here. I'm not shocked. It's just, like, a little surprising. I didn't think of them as, like, a great defensive team. Just like, hey, they're a good defensive team. Like, and as well as two Diamondbacks, two Padres. There's I think five teams across 10 positions here in the National League, a lot more in the American League. There's, you know, two Blue Jays and three Rangers and two Guardians as well. So I guess it's pretty similar on that side as well. Congrats to all those guys. Like, not a ton of huge shocks here. I think pitcher's always a bit of a surprise because you never really know. Like, it's hard to really tell who a good defensive pitcher is any given year. Good. The Heim one's interesting too, because, like, you know, that is, you know, they have like two guys who are starting catchers there, and like, obviously one's a better defender than the other, but it's interesting how good Heim had been this year and like really and last year as well to really like prove, hey, he's the guy who's gonna start at catcher, and Mitch Garver is just gonna, you know, DH essentially and like maybe get a couple of starts at catcher to spell Heim like every so often. The Gold Glove winners. Anything else you want to talk about here? I don't think there's a whole ton to talk about in that one.
No, just a nice crop of Gold Glove winners this year. Very happy for the Brian Hayes.
Yeah. For sure. Silver Sluggers, I think, are coming. The finalists have been announced. We don't need to go through all of them. But I believe the winners are coming on November 9th. So they're going to be later this week. So we'll talk about them on next week's episode. Now I feel like I've forgotten something we want to talk about, but we definitely want to talk about the Japan series. That's what it was.
The Japan series. The curse of Colonel Sanders is over.
The curse of Colonel Sanders has been broken. For the first time since 1985, the Hanshin Tigers are Japan series champions. They threw a Colonel Sanders cosplayer into the canal to celebrate that the curse is broken. Congrats to the Hanshin Tigers.
Yeah, also should add Yamamoto's final start. Or Oryx, which got them to a game 7.
Let's see. Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And his posting officially as of 9 hours ago, as of our recording, on MLB Trade Rumors, the Oryx Buffaloes have approved that posting. And I'm looking for the stats on that story.
I'm interested to see where he goes.
I mean, that's going to be fascinating, right? Because especially, you know, we were talking a little bit before we started recording. This is not a great free agent class. But there's a lot of Japanese pitchers that are like, have at least been like rumored or mentioned or like potentially getting posted. And largely they're pitchers, not a lot of hitters, but like, it will be fascinating. According to MLB Trade Rumors, scouts have suggested that he's a full grade above Kodai Senga, and Kodai Senga got 5 years, $75 million.
Wow. I think he's going to get something like Tanaka got.
Yeah, Tanaka was like, what, 7-120, something like that?
7-120, yeah. He's probably going to get more than that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just based on... Oh, I mean, his age, he's 25. Yeah. Tanaka, I think, was what, 26 or 27?
Yeah, something like that.
And then obviously, you know, inflation.
Yeah.
Did you find the stats for that start?
I did not, no.
Yeah, it's a lot tougher to find game logs for Japanese pitchers.
The baseball reference did, that anything.
He did over the last 3 years, each of the last 3 years, get a pitching triple crown, leading the league in wins, ERA, and strikeouts of the last three seasons. 2021, 18-5 with a 1.39 ERA, 206 strikeouts. 2022, 15-5, 1.68 ERA, 205 strikeouts. 2023, 16-6, 1.21 ERA, 169 strikeouts.
Yeah, so baseball reference does not have a game log.
The MVP Cy Young. I know. That's the first list I tried to. But yeah, he won the.
I know his my go to baseball reference for anything stat related.
Yeah. WBC champion, Olympic champion, MPB champion, maybe a World Series champion. Who knows?
Come to Philly, you Yamamoto. Know? You could maybe win one. Yeah. I'll take you here.
Here we go. ESPN, he had 14 strikeouts over 138 pitches. I don't see anything specifically beyond that. Apparently, in the first game of the Japan series, he gave up 7 runs on 10 hits in 5 2/3 innings. So it's a huge bounce back here in game 6.
Oh, wow.
Oryx obviously lost the game, and Hanshin won the series.
Good for them.
Here we go. Also, 9 innings, 1 run, 9 hits, 138 pitches, 14 strikeouts.
Wow.
Which broke Yu Darvish's record for strikeouts in a single Japan Series game. 9 hits is a lot.
That is.
You know, that's a little bit of luck there. But yeah, no walks also in that game. So finally found that from. Thank you to Yaku Cosmopolitan at Yaku Cosmo on Twitter. Who covers Japanese baseball for posting that stat line, because it's not easy to find. Yoshi's, and he's going to be signing this offseason, you know, pretty much guaranteed. So we'll see who signs him and where he's pitching next year. We're going to keep an eye on that. Couple of other guys who are not going to be, or at least who may or may not be with their teams next year. I think the biggest one, Joey Votto, the Reds declined his option, and he will be a free agent for the first time in his 20-year career.
Did you read the tweet they sent out?
The image?
Yeah, that they made it pretty clear that they're going to bring him back.
That they what?
They made it pretty clear that they had no intentions of ever bringing him back.
I don't know about no intentions. It certainly is one of those, like, it's 17 seasons, but certainly it was one of those, like, he, you know, there's not a high chance of it. But what they said was, so the quote is, at this point of the offseason, based on our current roster and projected plans for 2024, as an organization, we cannot commit to the playing time Joey deserves, which, you know, part of that is, and I mean, a big part of that is probably Joey Votto saying, I don't want to be a part-time player, right? It's both ends, I think. It's because I think they would be happy to have him around as a part-time player, which was what we've talked about on this podcast before, you and I, is like, you know, if Votto is a part-time player, he makes sense on that roster for that organization. If he's not going to be a part-time player, then obviously it doesn't make sense, because they have first baseman. They have two starting caliber first basemen, and they're playing one of them third, you know? So I get it. I get where they're coming from if Votto refuses to be a part-time player, which is Votto's prerogative. Now, has he proven that he can be a full-time player over the last 2 years? Not really. But, you know, we'll see. And I think part of it is, hey, if the Reds trade one of their young talents, right? If they trade Spencer Steer or Christian Encarnacion Strand, or you know, move somebody, or even, you know, say Stuart Fairchild and have Steer play left field, right? If they move one of those guys, then suddenly a spot opens up for Votto, you know, and then they can move one of those guys for a pitcher, which is something they need. So I can see them having a reunion. I can also see Votto going out there and telling other teams, I don't want to be a part-time player, and them saying, sorry, you're not a full-time player either. And him saying, okay, well, if I'm not going to be a full-time player, then I might as well go back to the Reds. So I can see a lot of possibilities for a reunion, but I also see what they're saying, which is like, hey, it doesn't make sense to have Votto right now based on the way our you know, what we've got right now. Right. And also, I mean, the money that they were going to be paying him didn't make sense either, you know, for any version of him, any role, you know, unless he, you know, was having, I mean, it was a $20 million option with a $7 million buyout. Like, it just didn't make any sense. So I still believe that Joey Votto will be a Red next season.
I think, oh man, I don't think he's going to be a Red. I think he's going to be a Blue Jay.
I could buy that, but like, I just, you know, the Blue Jays, I guess, because they're losing Belt, right? So, but I think if I was the Blue Jays, I'd rather get Belt back for a year than sign Votto for a year, you know? It's pretty much an either or, right? Because they're essentially the same guy, but Belt has been good the last few years, and Votto has not.
I need to look at the Twins roster. I feel like the Twins could be an option too.
Let's see. The Twins have, they had Donovan Solano play quite a bit of first base.
Yeah,
they had, you know, Joey Gallo around. They had Alex Kirilloff play quite. I mean, Alex Kirilloff is healthy. He plays first base for them, and Byron Buxton plays DH.
Yeah.
If Buxton is healthy, which he never is, but like, I just don't see a team that's going to give Joey Votto full-time player playing time.
Yeah.
So for me, it seems like Votto goes out to the market, says, I want to be a full-time player. And, you know, the Nationals or the Rockies, you know, or the A's are like, sure, I guess, you know, whatever. And then he's like, well, maybe I'd rather be a part-time player with the Reds than a full-time player with the Oakland Athletics of 2024, right? You know? But I don't, I mean, it, you know, it could still work. Although, again, the A's last year had their first baseman and DH were their two best players. So
Joey Votto, the Oakland A.
I mean, you know, like, again, like, I could buy it, but like, the places that Votto can play are the places that the A's don't need to. The only two spots that the A's don't need a new guy at.
Yeah, I think Votto's going to go somewhere where he can win a ring. I think that's what he's ultimately going to do.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, is he going to, like, does he have a better shot at winning a ring as a part-time player for the Dodgers or as a part-time player for the Reds?
Well,
like,
part-time player for any. Even. Yeah.
It feels like for any team, like if the Braves want him, right? Like maybe, but like do they? What use do they have?
So it's not just Votto the player you're getting. It's Votto the dude. Like, you're getting a guy that can teach the young guys you have coming through.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. It just feels like there's
honestly,
not a team.
Votto could be like a good fit in Arizona to coach up these young guys.
Sure, yeah, maybe the Diamondbacks or the Orioles. There are some of these teams, but like the Reds, to me, feel like also that team. You know, the Reds are also a lot of young guys trying to prove it, all very good. They were very close to a playoff spot. They were two games behind the Diamondbacks this year, and the Diamondbacks, you know, finished like, you know, like two games shy of a World Series win, you know, like, so it feels like, you know, if of all the options that are available, if what you want to do is be a part-time player on a team that's basically a glorified coach, then why not make that team the Cincinnati Reds, with whom you've spent your entire adult life?
Right.
That it just feels to me like any way you slice it, the best option for him is to just go back to the Reds. So I don't know. It feels like what's going to happen again to me is that Votto's going to go around, ask for a job, and everybody's going to be like, no, we don't want to give you what you want. And he's going to be like, all right, well, right, I guess I'll go to the Reds.
Yeah.
And that's what that means. You know, we've seen it happen with other players, both in baseball and other sports, where like a guy decides to test free agency and is like, you know what, I think I'd rather just stay with the team I was with. And then obviously then, you know, and you know, there's also like the extra draw of like, again, like, yes, Votto could go to the Diamondbacks, but like, is the value higher for the Diamondbacks versus being a Reds lifer for two teams that have a similar chance of making it to the World Series next year, right? Like,
yeah,
they're both good young core teams that both had good, like, strong seasons this year. Like, the Reds just need, both teams just need pitching, right? Like, it's, you know, so I don't know. We'll see. The other big option decision, Tim Anderson. The White Sox declined their option on Tim Anderson. They had a team option worth, Pat, you know this, right? 12 and a half, something like that.
The Tim 15? Anderson was 14 mil.
Yeah. 14 mil. Yep. Oh yeah, sorry. 12 and a half was Sean Manaea, Sean Manaea opted out,
yeah.
Which is a little wild to me, but yeah, Tim Anderson, the White Sox declined a $14 million option on him. Boy, do you think they think he's fully busted?
I feel like they could have at least traded him and got value for him. But like,
I mean, he was really bad last year.
He was, but this was like the first bad season he's had.
He was not good the year before. He was below average the year before, but he was
still an adequate hitter. And you know, like,
yeah. I mean, he was an all-star.
He hit 301. And he was in
the hit 301. Yeah. Yeah, he was an all-star that year. Like, so he had a good like half a season, and then he got injured.
Yeah.
Then so maybe it's the injury, and they looked at the injury and they were like, we don't think he's ever going to fully recover from the injury or whatever the injury was.
I think
because again, he hit 301 in 2022, and he didn't even cross 301 slugging in 2023.
Yeah,
like he had a 296 slugging percentage in 2023. I mean, he had one home run all season. I think I might have seen that one. Like, looking just at the 2023 stats, you would think he's completely cooked.
Sure, but I think Reinsdorf is just cheap. I think there's value there still. I think there's a lot of value you can still get out of Tim Anderson. And, like, $14 million is not a lot. And like,
no,
at worst, you flip him at the deadline.
Right.
At best, he's an all-star. He can teach some of these young guys coming through the White Sox system like Montgomery. And then you flip him at the deadline and get even more back. Like, this is just a big, big whiff by the White Sox organization.
I agree that it seems wild for them to just decline the option, that you would think they could get at least a little bit of value out of it. Because I agree, like, I feel like you could, you know, he's enough of a reclamation candidate that you could pick up the option and trade him for something of even minor value and pay none of the money. Like, you could probably trade all $14 million of that contract for, you know, a double-A prospect and be fine. Yeah. I think they could have moved him. Did you pick up the option in the sim?
Yeah, I did. So for those don't know, we do the off-season sim. I'm the White Sox this year. Yeah, I did pick up his option because, like, my thought process is, okay, you know, my direction I'm taking with the White Sox is to trade away guys like Cease and Robert and get younger. And, you know, Tim Anderson, I can either move him or he's here to be a veteran presence to the young guys coming through the system before he leaves. So I extended his option because I think it's just dumb to let him go for nothing.
Yeah.
Like, for nothing.
For nothing. I mean, like, for $1 million. They paid $1 million to let him go.
Yeah. Like, right? What are we doing here in Chicago?
It does seem like they could have traded the contract and gotten some value out of it. Although, like, you know, I don't know how much he gets in free agency either, right? Like, on the other side of that, I don't know if, like, does he get $13 million in a free agent deal this year? I don't think so.
I don't think I don't know. We have to see how the market, because again, it's a weak free agent class, and you know, there's some teams.
It's a weak free agent class.
That could
yeah,
use
but
a
like
shortstop.
If, you know, if I was a GM, like I would give him like a 1 year, $8 million, $7 million prove it deal. What did Bellinger get this year? Bellinger got like 17.
Yeah.
But Bellinger was a former MVP, right? So like right. Bellinger got 12 and a half. Bellinger got 12 and a half, was 27 years old, was a former MVP rookie of the year, yeah. Had more bad seasons, right? Yeah. Had been worse for a little bit longer, but got a $12.5 million prove-it deal. Tim Anderson is going into his age 31 season, has not been an MVP, so just doesn't have the ceiling that Bellinger has, maybe has the floor that Bellinger had, is older than Bellinger was. So I don't know if he gets, you know, like $12.5 million what Bellinger got. Do you think that Anderson gets that $12.5 million? I don't know if he does.
I think he'll get at least ten. So, like, I think there's gonna be maybe a shortstop hungry team that's gonna look at this and be like, okay, cool. We don't have to give up value now for right. Tim Anderson, but we can like, I wouldn't be shocked if the Dodgers sign him. I think the Dodgers are gonna sign him.
Playing Reinsdorf's advocate here, right? Like, I feel like if
how dare I you, am- you monster.
Reinsdorf devil, same thing, right?
Yeah.
If I'm you know, if I'm the White Sox and like it seems to me like if I'm trading Anderson, I have to eat money in that deal and get maybe something.
Yeah.
Like maybe something, maybe nothing, right?
Yeah.
Whereas on the other end, I can save, you know, like if I have to eat $7 million of that deal, that's $7 million instead of $1 million, yeah. Right? That's a lot more money. And then you're getting back probably not a great prospect, right? Cause for a season of a Tim Anderson that might be broken. So I can see where the White Sox are coming from on this of like, I don't think a team is willing to pay Tim Anderson $14 million, which means if you're trading him, because it means that a team is giving up value and giving up money to keep him, which means that you have to eat some of that money. And I just like, you know, when he signs a $7 or $8 million deal to try to bounce back with, you know, maybe the Dodgers, I think that makes sense. They certainly need to, you know, shore up their shortstop situation.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe they fix him and then he signs a bigger deal in a year. But like,
sure.
It seems to me like the White Sox were either like, we're going to be stuck with Tim Anderson, who might suck. And because I get the other side of it, right? Is like, if he doesn't suck, then you trade him in half a season.
Yeah.
But, you know, that can be a big hope for a guy who just had, I mean, a truly abysmal year. Like a really, really bad year. And the way we were talking about, I mean, we were talking about Bellinger for years of like, is this dude like, should the Dodgers even tender him a contract at this point? And they did, and they kept tendering him a contract, and he had, you know, one of the worst full seasons we've seen a baseball player have.
Yeah.
And then the very next year, Tim Anderson had a worse season.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, it's just like, it's hard. I can't discount that maybe the White Sox didn't the wrong move here. Maybe the White Sox did make the right move in just like giving up on Anderson, letting him go, and letting somebody else deal with him as a problem.
Yeah, possible. I don't know. I get he's got the issues. We saw the fight, but like.
Yeah, and then, I mean, obviously, he's also got on-field issues, and like, and you know, it doesn't help that he and Tony La Russa didn't get along, which we were all on Anderson's side for that, except the one guy who was on Anderson's side was Jerry Reinsdorf, yeah. who loves Tony La Russa. So I get it, you know, I understand, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's, I don't know, man. He's like, when I compare his, you know, last two seasons to the two seasons that Bellinger had before he became a free agent.
Yeah.
And Bellinger got $12.5 million.
Yeah.
Like it just, you know, Anderson's been worse and has historically not been, and not has had as high of a ceiling as yeah. Bellinger did. So it just like, it feels to me like, you know, Anderson's hoping for $8 million, right? And if he's an $8 million valued player, then when you're trading another guy, when you're trading somebody for him, so you're trading somebody, so that's another $1 million knocked off the value, which means that the value that a team gets for him is $6 to $7 million, which means that if you're Reinsdorf, you then have to pay $8 million to get rid of Belt, to get rid of Anderson, get a player who's a lottery ticket, and you know, and then see what happens, as opposed to just being like, you know what, I'm gonna pay you $1 million and be through with you. So yeah. I don't know. I can see it.
Can we talk about the Liam Hendricks opt out real quick? How dumb it is.
I love the Liam Hendricks opt out so much.
So he's still gonna get his $15 million. It's just over 10 years.
I love it. It's
smart.
It's my favorite thing in the world. I remember looking, like, because I was looking into it when we were starting the sim, and I like noticed it and I posted it in Slack, and I was like, I love this opt out so much, I want to work for this guy. Like, I want to send in a resume, and my cover letter is just, I saw the Liam Hendricks opt out and thought I have to work for you. It's incredible. Yeah. It's so good. It's a $15 million team option with a $15 million buyout, but the buyout is paid over 10 years. So he gets $1.5 million each year over the next 10 years, or they can pick up his team option for $15 million. So he gets paid either way. It's just one, he gets paid right away, and the other, he gets paid over the next 15 years. And if they do the buyout, then he can go get a contract from somebody else. It's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's such a good, I need to copy it. Like, I'm an agent in the offseason sim, and there's no shot that I'm not, like, I'm definitely gonna try to find a way to do this. And, like, you know, Warble's gonna be like, well, you can't do that. I'm gonna be like, Liam Hendricks. Yeah. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be so good. It has to be like one of the last contracts, though, because otherwise it's gonna get abused.
We love Warble, but we definitely love to abuse stuff.
Yeah, I don't envy Warble's position for that kind of thing, but there's certainly things that I've been like, hey, this would be like a fun,
well, he's had to deal with a Shohei Ohtani contract for the last, what, 4 years? Yeah, 4 years.
Four years, I think.
There was my first extension.
One of those years he wasn't commish.
Yeah.
So three of the last four years.
Yeah, three of the last 4 years he's had to deal with Shohei. God bless that guy.
I definitely have a deal in the works where a guy gets an opt out activated if he gets a certain amount of saves in the previous year.
That's incredible.
It may or may not actually happen, but that's what I have floated to the GM.
I hope it's Craig Kimbrell, because that would be funny.
It's not Craig Kimbrell. First of all, if it was Craig Kimbrell, that means Kimbrell is re-signing with the Phillies, and you don't want that.
Oh, dear God.
Because we're not in open free agency yet, but so it's not Craig Kimbrell, but yeah, there is. I definitely want to do a contract like that where it's like, hey, this guy has been kind of a setup man type guy, but if he might prove himself a closer in the next 2 years, right? So like, sign him to a 3-year deal, but he just, you know, if he turns from a setup man to a closer, he kind of wants to be able to get closer money from that. So, you know, a opt out kicks in if he gets saves. It feels logical. It feels like it makes sense. I don't think, you know, but we'll see. We'll see if it happens. And we'll see a lot of other things happen. But Pat, you are now about to talk to Frack about the World Series. You want to give any tease for the next segment?
We're definitely not nice to the Rangers. I feel like we were both unhappy about this World Series, me just because it did not feel competitive at all for most of the series, and Frack because he actually hates the Rangers. So, you know, it's fun. It's an interesting discussion.
It's great. so yeah, now, let's kick it to that now.
All right, everyone, welcome to our World Series victory segment. Joining us, the man who has just represented the Rangers the entire way, the guy who's not even a Rangers fan, but unfortunately lives in the area and I don't mean unfortunate. Dallas is a nice area, but it is Dallas week here in Philadelphia, so I can't be too nice to Dallas this week, but we have Frack with us. Frack, what's going on, man?
I am doing all right. This postseason run has been, it feels like a prison of my own design in some ways.
Yeah, so, like, you're not a Rangers fan.
No.
And yet you've had to live through this.
Mm-hmm.
It must be like an out-of-body experience, seeing them finally get it done.
It feels like something that I didn't watch the last game, but I did mm-hmm. see some of the highlights this morning on my phone, and it did seem like my first thought was, okay, this was inevitably going to happen. Like, I may have been talking all this bravado for most of my life, saying, you know, the team's never going to win a World Series. They're going to go 100 years. It's not something I have to worry about until I'm middle-aged. Like, don't worry about it. But it was going to happen sooner or later. And of all the teams that haven't won going into the season, or even like two seasons ago, when they were still bad, it seemed like the Rangers were the safe bet to finally come around and win one. What are we talking about here? There's the Rangers, the Mariners, the Padres.
Rockies, Rays.
Rockies, Rays, is that it?
So yeah, right now it's Padres, Brewers, the Milwaukee Brewers have not won one.
Wait, did they win in the 80s?
Nope, they have never won a World Series.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Now, Milwaukee has seen a World Series when yes. the Braves were there, but the Brewers themselves have not won a World Series.
Oh yeah, that's not...
In fact, there are still, I think there's only one team left that has never made a World Series, and that's Seattle.
The Seattle Mariners, yes. Lots of fun.
Have the Brewers made a World Series? Now I'm curious.
They have. They have somewhere in the 80s they made a World Series. 81, maybe?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
83, I don't know. But, I mean, the Rangers from when they moved from Washington to, I don't know, 90s, terrible. They came yeah. close. They finished second to the A's, one of the 70s years. Like, that was their high water mark. And then I think they got Bert Campaneris from the A's. He was one of their, he was like the first guy to make the big leagues in that dynasty. And so the Rangers had nothing. They had Tip Williams, then they had nothing. They played in a minor league park that they just threw a bunch of bleachers onto. Yeah, they had Nolan Ryan in the early 90s, but also that was it. It's like yep. if a 90-loss Rangers team got to Grom, but like a little bit older.
Yeah.
They kind of progressed. The Rangers were definitely a backup. They are a backup to the Cowboys. Like, everything revolves around the Cowboys here, as you would assume.
I mean, you look at what the Cowboys did in the 90s compared to the Rangers. I mean, there's no reason to watch the Rangers in the 90s other than Ivan Rodriguez, you know?
In the late 90s, they sneak into the playoffs. They get buzzsawed by the Yankees.
Yeah.
About every year. I mean, we don't even have to go back that far. The Cowboys have been the dominant sports team here since the 60s. Like, they've built up roots. They've gone to Super Bowls. 60s, 70s, 90s, nothing since. But I hate to say it's a football town, because in many ways Houston does not feel like a football town, and yet the Texas mantra lives on, so it's not predetermined. But this feels like a Cowboys town, and you start to see that kind of nasty Cowboys toxicness sneak into the Rangers fan base when they go to the playoffs. If the Rangers are bad, I feel like going to Rangers games is great, because it's just the diehards, which is, I mean, there's nothing wrong with bandwagon fans. It's what keeps sports going. But you're going to a Rangers game in 100 degrees in a day in July at the old stadium, you have to be crazy. Like, you have to love baseball. It's 100 degrees.
Yeah. I mean, like, the mid 2000s Rangers, like the Beltre, Hamilton, Michael Young teams were fun. Like, I liked, I actually really liked the 2010 Rangers.
Okay.
I wanted the 2010 Rangers to win the World Series so bad, mainly for Cliff Lee.
Yes, I remember like that trade.
That team was fun.
Yeah, and so growing up here, I would say the mid-2000s, like when I got into baseball in 2007, 7, 8, 9, those Rangers, I don't think I hated those Rangers. I remember teenage Elvis Andrus at a AA. But yeah, I remember those teams were fine. Teenage Elvis Andrus in AA. Martin Perez came up around that time. So it was fun to watch that team coalesce. Except when they they started winning in 2010. And
yeah.
I do remember thinking Giants-Rangers is my nightmare World Series. Because, of course, the Rangers are a division rival. And a lot of my family were Rangers fans if they weren't A's fans. So there's this natural love-hate relationship that starts to form. Going to Rangers games felt different in 2011 and 12. Of course it did. They were good. If the Cowboys had started to be bad at that point, I mean, this is not the Tony Romo Pete Cowboys. This is the Romo's falling apart Cowboys. And Max won a World Series, a championship in 2011 as well. So it's a big time for Dallas sports. But that was when, I remember seeing family members get catcalled. I was called a slur. Like, this crap was bad. And so that's when I just absolutely lost my respect for the Rangers organization. And the fact that they're the last team that still hasn't had a pride night and that they just threw public bite at a stadium. Like, Arlington is totally beholden to Six Flags and sports franchises in a red area. They just pluck down money that, like, if Oakland had seen even half of that money, A's would have already started building our terminal. Like, it's definitely not a double standard. It's just different. How do realistic fiscal permits compete with crazy ones for sports teams? Crazy areas that'll just throw down money. But anyway, at this point, like, I've hated the Rangers, and the 2015-16 teams felt weird, like an in-between, a way station, because it was Elvis, it was Beltre, it was Senshu Chu.
Rodor was there.
Yep, when he was briefly good. Oh, that's it.
Hugh Darvish.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Hamels.
Hated Darvish. Darvish. The correct pronunciation. The correct pronunciation is Darvish. His father's Iranian. And so all these guys, I do remember that, but there was a Frisco Rough Riders team in 2014 where all 9 of the players I saw went to the big leagues. It's the only time that's ever happened. It was like Gallo, Odor, Ryan Brua, Lewis Brinson, just not good players. Who was that Phillies catcher? I think he was on
the Phillies. Jorge Alfaro.
Alfaro, yep. Alfaro,
the key piece of the JT Realmuto trade.
No way.
So Alfaro, when the Cole Hamels trade happened, Alfaro, Nick Williams. Nick Williams came over in that. God, who was the pitcher? There were 2 pitchers. One of them was Matt Harrison, I believe.
I remember him. Mm-hmm.
The other, Jared Thompson, I think it was one of the pitchers that came over.
It was someone who wound up being good. Texas.
Hang on, let's tell you now. Please. So like, I got Hamels BREF. So it was Hamels was traded to the Rangers with Jake Diekman for Jorge Alfaro, Alec Asher, Jared Eichhoff, Matt Harrison, Jake Thompson, Nick Williams.
I was a big Eichhoff guy.
Eichhoff was decent his first full year in Philly, and then injuries hampered him. But like, there was a moment there where it was like Eichhoff was going to be a key piece to this team, and then like injuries completely screwed his career over.
That sucks.
Jake Thompson was another one where we thought he'd be decent. Like, he sucked when he first got here, but he had like 11, like 8 good starts with the Phillies in 2017. And then he just fell apart as well. Nick Williams was terrible.
He looked okay in Frisco.
He looked like okay. He had the potential, but he didn't put the work in at Lehigh.
Okay.
Because I That's watched fair. A lot of Nick Williams at Lehigh. Because, like, so like for me, and like, try not to make this a Phillies discussion, but like, it's okay. I watched a lot of Lehigh games. So I watched Rhys Hoskins, Aaron Nola, Zach Eflin, Jorge Alfaro, all these guys come through the Lehigh system. And Nick Williams was one of the laziest players I've ever watched.
Oh my God. See, and I was
like, that's where I was like, this dude is going to be horrid when he gets to the big leagues. I was completely out on Nick Williams because of how lazy he was in Lehigh. Because, like, we had what we called the Bash Brothers in Lehigh, which was Hoskins and Cousins. Like, they combined for, like, 60 home runs or something like that in Lehigh 1 year. And we thought Nick Williams was going to be the third Bash Brother. But he was just, he was so lazy. And, like, you could see the potential was there, but he did not put that work in.
Yeah, I don't remember. See, of course, I was watching a younger Nick Williams, much younger than you, so I wasn't as good at noticing those sort of things, but I totally believe you, because it felt like he had all this tools to at least be cromulent in the big league.
Yeah.
Not good, but fine. I would say the same
about Alfaro. Like, I thought there was I was kind of upset to see Alfaro go, but like, we got JT Realmuto back, and Alfaro didn't pan out.
Oh, but, like,
I was a big Jorge Alfaro fan as he was coming up. But yeah, like, there's old Ranger teams, and then they, like we'll get into this in a moment, because I want to talk about the World Series first, but, like, the Rangers went through the tank and everything, and now here they are as champions. So I gotta ask you, like, what were your thoughts on the World Series itself?
Well, I think it's very funny that I paid my way to see the Rangers lose a World Series game, and they won all the rest.
That is awesome. You get to see their one loss.
Yes, and that was special, just to be there in general, but also,
yeah.
I've been to that stadium 17 times. They only started letting fans in 2020 in the World Series, of course. So, like, I know that stadium very well, especially because it's not been out there long enough for people to plan road trips. But there's a I mentioned this in the last segment, but I've been thinking about it a lot. There's a staircase to nowhere. It's standing room only. It's behind a scoreboard, a very thin rectangular scoreboard at far back of center field. Like, it's like the Mount Davis seats at the Coliseum. And that's where I watched Martin Perez, who I remember going to see as a kid in AA. Martin Perez just blow up against Arizona. And I thought in that moment that, first of all, it was a cool circle. Because Martin Perez, yes, as we figured out, was not on the 2011 team. He was on the 2012 team. But it felt like the old Rangers sort of wrapped back around.
Yeah.
As far as the World Series in general, I think looking back on it, it does feel inevitable. Like, Arizona didn't stand a damn chance.
Like, so here's, I did not, this was what I was afraid of, and I think this is where discussion is going to come about the expanded playoffs, because, like, sure, Arizona deserves to be there, you know, it should have been Philadelphia. But Arizona, they won the 2 games in the bank. They deserve to be there. But like, when you have a team with a negative run differential in the World Series, it's not shocking that they get blown out of the water. And not only that, they have a AAA bullpen.
Yeah, it's the Reno Aces.
Yeah.
100%.
And I, Adlin, like, so obviously there's the Philly fan in me that's pissed off.
As you should that be.
That Philly did not get here, and Arizona just laid a stinker. Then there's the baseball fan in me who is even more angry, because win or lose, regardless if Philly would have won or lost this series, Philly Rangers during Dallas week for the Eagles and Cowboys would have been incredible. And this series would still be going on right now as we're speaking.
Oh, yeah.
This would have gone seven if it was Philly and the Rangers.
Well, I'm going to be completely honest. And of course, we don't know for sure. But I think that Scherzer is, I mean, I know he got hit in the arm with a comebacker, but I don't think he was going to go far. I think it would come down to like a Dane Dunning game seven start, and the Rangers would have just gotten destroyed, which would have made me feel so much better about my life. Oh my goodness. To watch them yank. To watch the Blues like that.
Yeah, because like if it was Philly, I feel like they'd take at least one in Arlington, take two back in Philly, and then finish it off back in Arlington.
Yeah.
And it's like we were robbed of a potentially great World Series. Like you have the
that's an all timer.
Like the historic hitting of Corey Seager and Bryce Harper in a World Series game.
The Rangers.
You could have had Eovaldi Wheeler. You could have had Montgomery Nola. You could have had Ranger.
Andrew Heaney.
this is no disrespect to Brandon Fott, because Brandon Fott was really good these playoffs. I'm
such a huge Brandon Fott fan.
But, like, Zach Gallen ran out of gas. Merrill Kelly was the only pitcher that tried. And, like, aside from Craig Kimbrell, at least the Phillies had a bullpen that, you know, not a triple-A bullpen.
I think that there's a lot of people saying, I'm sure I don't read, that or saying that Arizona's ahead of schedule. Yeah, they are. And
that's kind of why certainly are.
That's why it's fun, in a way, that they made it this far to show the
other teams. Great experience for them. It's good experience for Carroll, for Thomas, for Lawler, the guys that are going to be the future of this team, for Gallen, Fott, you know.
It's definitely showing the other teams that are in this mid-stage that, like, these expanded playoffs, you can kind of go for it, but not
If you make the right moves, like, Arizona did not make a lot of moves. They brought in Thompson, and they brought in Seawald.
And Pham. Was Pham a deadline guy?
And yes, Pham was a deadline guy.
Yeah, and that was huge.
And they gave up nothing.
And let's turn the conversation to Seattle briefly. They have, one year after another, made all of the wrong deadline moves.
Oh my God, have they?
I know Corey. Corey, who's been on this podcast before, our friend, talking about the A's, hates the Marte trade. I love it because you're going to go for it, and it's your last year, and you're going to have to trade Lizardo anyway because
they're
not good the next year. You might as well. Like, no one trades prospects these days. Go for it. Watching Marte 55 games was way more excitement than I've ever had watching Jesus Lizardo pitch. So, in that regard, deadline moves, it's way more fun if you can make those deadline moves, even if it's for mid-tier guys that, like, you should be scoffing at, but, like, hey, who knows? They might be World Series heroes. So, I'm kind of ambivalent about the expanded playoffs. You're either going to have four teams in each league, not even four. Honestly, if you're going to do a CS and a World Series only, we'll find out who's the best team. But if not, and I don't really get this like half in, half out thing. The playoff structure is fine. You're going to find who's the best team. You're just going to find out who's the hottest team.
Yeah.
It is fine. I hate when people cling to the fallacy that, Arizona was somehow the best and they were just waiting. Like, no.
They got hot.
For a month in July, they were worse than the A's. They were also very good in April, but I'm just saying that there was a period of time where they were playing worse baseball than the A's. That's absurd. So I think it's good long term for baseball, but no, this World Series was not very entertaining.
And the ratings are already coming in, and it's one of the lowest rated World Series of all time.
Now, part of that is, I think, because Middle America, because the coasts just don't care.
Yeah, because, like, you don't have any, like, if you notice, if you don't have an East Coast team in the World Series, there's not a lot of interest.
Which, I have a perfect solution for this. Geographic leagues.
I mean, I would have loved to see, like, an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference. But because of how old MLB is, and because, you know, of all the boomers, we're never going to see that. Honestly, a division with the Phillies, Yankees, Mets, and Red Sox all in it is personal hell. That's just a nightmare.
I think it would be
Most toxic division of all time.
I think it would be four divisions of eight. So the division that you speak of would be New York, the Mets, the Phillies, the Red Sox,
Toronto, the Nationals, Baltimore.
Nationals, Baltimore, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. Oh, no. Get rid of Cleveland, just Pittsburgh. Like, there's some filler in there.
No, you can have Cleveland and Pittsburgh in there. And then you can have your Southern Division with the Braves, the Marlins, the Rays.
Baltimore, Washington.
Yeah, Baltimore, Washington.
Probably Nashville expansion.
Yeah.
Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
Anyways,
we're off topic here.
As we usually get.
As we usually get when we talk. As we're talking about, like, I'm not sure how you feel about the future of the Diamondbacks now after this. As a baseball fan, I feel good about their future because they haven't hit their peak yet. They still have Drew Jones who's coming up. They still have Tommy Tanks in the minors.
Let me interject my own personal thoughts into this Diamondbacks team, so my personal experiences. So, Amarillo, AA affiliate, has won two of the last three Texas League championships, I think. Well, Frisco, the Texas affiliate, won the one in between. But, like, it's kind of cool that this wound up to be the World Series.
Yeah.
Not only because I have seen the AA, AAA, and Major League teams play each other this year. So, like, I saw the rosters face off. I saw Andrew Salfrank back in April and didn't know who he was. Didn't think twice about him until the World Series when we were all talking about him. And I was like, have I seen this guy? Looks familiar. Anyway, I think I feel more comfortable about the Diamondbacks' future than I do anyone else in that division except LA. And even then, I'm starting to wonder, is LA gonna bring up some guys, specifically hitters? Because they have the pitching. I just don't see that many hitters.
I don't think LA has the pitching anymore. I mean, like, May's out for a full year. But you don't know what kind of Walker Buehler you're getting. Herschel's a corpse at this point. Like, he can't stay healthy over a full year.
He could be a Ranger. Like, that's still on the table. Yeah.
It's especially more likely now with the World Series victory.
His neighbor is Chris Young, the GM.
Like, yeah.
I who knows, but I was talking more Sheehan, Bobby Miller.
Miller's good, yeah. I don't think Sheehan has it. Guys to show it.
There are few AA pitchers I've seen who dominated like Emmett Sheehan, and he only pitched an inning and a half. Like 19. Wow. And it was 9-11 last year. He just absolutely blew the world away. And then Frisco scored like 16 runs when they pulled him. Like, I mean, Sheehan is good, and that's why I made sure to get him franchise trapped. I just had to. Off all the Dodgers fans. I think their pitching is good. There's this guy they have in Oklahoma City. But Stone and Stone's good, even if no one seems to think that anymore. There's someone else, but I think their pitching is fine. I just don't know who's going to hit. They have, is it Cartaya, their prospect, or Cartaya?
Yeah, so he struggled with hitting this year.
Like 120 strikeouts in AA. No thanks. That's not a prospect anymore. Yeah. He's just a bad minor leaguer. That's the type of thing where it's like, is this one of your good hitters? If so, you're in trouble. So I do think that we kind of overlook.
They do have the money to go sign a Shohei.
Exactly.
Which I think they're going to do.
Okay.
I honestly don't know. But
yeah,
I like the Diamondbacks' future more than a lot of teams in that division. Brent Strom being reason number one, because he can duct tape a pitching staff to a World Series. He is a
damn good pitching coach.
And he's looking pretty frail out there. But, I mean, he's Hall of Fame for coaches, so...
Yeah.
Maybe even a Hall of Famer, I don't know. But I think that with him developing enough pitchers, Amarillo keeps looking good. I mean, Lawler's incredible. Caleb Roberts could be a guy. Drew Jones, you mentioned. No one else comes to mind, especially with pitchers like Fott and Boston, and one of the Nelsons is good, and one of them's just a journeyman. I can't remember which one, but I kind of like where they're going. They need to figure out the stadium.
Yes. Chase needs to go. Dude, it's a tomb. It is an absolute tomb.
It's so expansive, and they haven't fixed it for a reason. I've talked about this on the podcast. They haven't fixed it for a reason, because they want renovations.
Yeah.
I think, depending on how downtown looks in 5 years, they're just going to say, pick a suburb and build us one there, because... Geez, I can't believe Vegas and Phoenix are going to have teams, but there's going to be a period of time where they both have teams.
Yeah.
I think they'll both leave in our lifetimes, but yeah, I like the Diamondbacks' future probably more than a lot of teams in the playoffs, but I don't know. I wish I knew where the Rangers are going. Is this team going to hang around for 4 years, or is this their high water mark? What do you think?
Let's talk about that. So the Rangers took an interesting approach to building this team. They tanked for 1, 2, 3 years here, and on the third year, they signed Corey Seager and Marcus Semien to mega deals.
So,
and we all laughed at them. We all laughed about it.
I'll jump in for nuance sake, because I don't know if everyone's as chained to this team as I am. I say chained because I don't want to. It's not my choice. So, their owner is very homophobic and very old. Surprise, surprise. So, they built the new stadium, and I think they were bad for a couple of years, but remember, the GM is still... It's John Daniels, and he built the last great team, and I do think the 2011 Rangers are the best team of that decade. Maybe the 2019 Astros, but yeah, I think they were still kind of cheating. So, probably the 2011 Rangers. They didn't win the World Series because, you know, it's not the best team that wins. So, it's the one that doesn't make the dumb mistakes.
Right.
So, the team was kind of sliding, but in 2020, they were going to do it. Because remember, they traded for Kluber.
Yep.
I don't know what else they did, but they were kind of like, they still had Gallo, and some of these guys looked competent, honestly.
They brought in Mike Minor, and they still had Lance Lynn.
Yes, and the team looks like the current Yankees without Judge.
Yeah.
Like, almost guy for guy. Kiner Falefa. Kinder Falafel, as it's correctly pronounced. So, the team flopped because of COVID. And as a fan of a team who was built to win the 2020 World Series, and then that whole season fell apart, I do feel bad. Like, come on, it's a pandemic. We're going to be saying what if for the rest of our lives. I get it. But Kluber pitched 6 innings. They traded the best closer in baseball for him. Oops. And then it looked like they were back at square zero. The owner's still old. They're a bad team playing in a brand new ballpark, which is just the absolute worst case scenario for a team. Like, the A's have been churning through potential playoff caliber teams, hoping that one of them's going to be in a new stadium, because you have to open that new stadium with a good team to build your brand. Like, it's critical. And I do think, maybe this is projecting, that part of the problem with the Rangers is that they opened the new stadium, the pandemic happened, their team sucked. It's bad. Like, that's when you have to, like, get the owner's personal money, which I'm never going to say an owner should spend their personal money on their business. I don't think any of the owners should be allowed to have that much money, but in a business sense, you're going to have to pony up
to avoid the embarrassment, because the Rangers were trained toward embarrassment, especially because of the Astros in that division. So kind of had to get Seager. I don't think Seager was a bad deal. I don't think anyone said it would be a bad deal, even if it was an absurd amount of money. Like, whatever. I don't think he was a Hall of Famer then, but I think he's a Hall of Famer now. Same thing with the one that I laugh at, but like I said to Dylan a couple weeks ago, I would have laughed at any Marcus Semien deal that was more than 3 years. Like, I just can't. There's a barrier here. I can't see him as the Robinson Cano type. I see him as the Jonathan VR type. So who knows? That was where it kind of looked desperate. I think DeGrom looked desperate because this time last year, remember, Judge broke the AL record against the Rangers. They lost 90 games. Their manager's an idiot. Just a jerk. And Seager didn't play in the last day, because I think he was pissed. He wound up picking this team and all this and that. And I think Semien, I want to project what he was thinking, but like, for a quadruple A player to make that much money, you're set. Like, do you need to go to the World Series? Of course he does. But like, it's not the worst outcome. But for Seager, the guy who already won a World Series, like, kind of offensive. So they did put a lot of money in it because they had to save their brand, and it worked out.
Yeah, and like as they're doing this, they're able to build this incredible farm that still has Wyatt Langford on it, who looks like he's going to be a stud. But, you know, they have Evan Carter, who made an impact. Josh Jung, who made an impact.
Well, they get, you know,
they make all these smart trades as well. Like, well, he wasn't really a trade, but like stealing Adolis Garcia from the Cardinals, smart. Mm-hmm. Jonah Heim, smart. They signed Nady Eovaldi. Like, built this team.
I think that the funny thing about Heim is, and again, this is kind of where you go value versus vibes.
Yeah.
Value wise, they stole Heim. But vibe-wise, I can't think of any Rangers fans who are going to tell me with a straight face, yeah, I liked it when they traded Elvis away. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the A's argument of like, yeah, they trade their stars away, and over the course of several years, you get close to the war value of what they traded away. I don't think it's going to be the case, at least for Chapman. But anyway, it was in previous times. But if you go ask a random fan, hey, what did you think about trading this guy or this guy? They're going to say, I hated that. That sucked. So at that point in the Heim trade, the Heim Elvis trade, where he paid their franchise star to go play for a division rival and paid half his salary, that's bad. That's another one of the things where you're just tanking your brand. So yeah, they got Heim for free. It paid off. He's a good catcher, but one seems to think he could catch all the time. I don't know. This was the first year where they actually didn't block his path. The Garver trade was good.
Very good. Ezekiel Duran was a great acquisition.
I mean, the Gallo trade, just squeezing the Yankees for a bunch of guys.
Yep.
And two of them sucked. Two of them didn't. I think the A's do that all the time. You can do that if you also have the money to back it up, and where you're trading away, you're getting a bulk trade, but you can also go out in free agency and bid for some of these guys. So the Carter draft, drafting Carter, I thought was one of the dumbest things they ever did, and I've never looked more wrong. However, I knew I was going to look wrong before everyone else, so I pivoted, and now I'm the Evan Carter guy.
There you go.
Works out like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Luis Angel Acuna, he's going to be good. I don't know. He's all-star good, but he's going to be good. Gacy looks really, really solid. He traded someone else to the Cardinals, a pitcher. Robbie, R-O-B-Y. Yeah. He looks good. Like, they did. They did a good job of trading, like you said. Pretty good job of drafting, except... Come on, who are their two big draft picks these last few years? for Lankford?
Yeah. Oh boy, that's a great question. Let's see here.
No, wait, do you not know? Because I can tell you. I just was hoping.
Oh yeah, you can tell me.
Lighter and Rocker.
That's right. Yeah. They're pretty bad.
If a lesser team, not a lesser team, if a poorer team picked Lighter and Rocker, that could have sunk their franchise. Like,
yeah.
Let's imagine if the Twins did something like that. They're screwed. Like, yeah. Lighter was sent to Arizona, the developmental league, because he couldn't hit the strike zone. He came back and he's kind of okay, but like, he's a reliever at best now. Like, maybe a reliever? I don't even think he'll make the big leagues. Yeah, draft picks fail all the time. That's kind of how life works in baseball, but Vanderbilt studs that you thought were really, really good, that everyone thought was really, really good, they just died on the vine. And the Rangers still managed to win a World Series. Like, kind of absurd how many mistakes they made. And the DeGrom was a mistake. There's no way that contract makes sense. It's hilarious. And it's hilarious now. Again, you just traded Luis Angel Acuña for Scherzer to get there. Like, that's absurd. So yeah, Lighter looks terrible. I haven't seen Rocker pitch yet, but I don't think he's made it above a low A ball. So our team has made a lot of good decisions. They made some mistakes and gotten by anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing we said was like, if this team suffers big injuries, or if this bullpen doesn't work out, this team's not going to make the playoffs. And you know, they worked out. They everything that was supposed to hit.
For those who may not know the baseball history side of things, I think I will. So he comes up and sells a bunch of tickets. So the owner's like, well, I'm going to wear this high school's arm down. He's selling a bunch of tickets. So he's going to start every 6 day for my awful team that's going to lose 1,000 games this year. He's my big ticket because people come to see him play. He wore his arm out, and this once-in-a-generation left-handed amazing pitcher basically didn't have a career. He was absolutely abused. I do not think he pitched more than 2 years. He was supposed to be one of the greatest pitchers in baseball, and he just absolutely failed. He was the first Ranger star. He failed. And so ever since then, there's been the curse of David Clyde. That means that the Rangers aren't allowed to develop a pitcher. They just don't. The curse has, I have followed the curse most of my life, and I have seen it. It's a great story because everyone in the Rangers organization knows about it. He is the specter hovering beyond them. He once called.
They called this guy up when he was 18.
Yeah.
Wow.
He called his career a classic case of how not to handle a young talent. He became dependent on alcohol, said it was the lowest point of his life. Clyde's unsuccessful career made him a poster boy for bringing up young players. Whitey Herzog said he was forced to leave Clyde in the game longer than usual because fans wanted to see the 18-year-old pitch, which is where we start getting into child abuse. I hate to say it, but that's not good.
No.
Former teammate and the face of the Rangers, Tom Grieve, said keeping Clyde on the roster was the dumbest thing you could do to a high school pitcher. And Tom Grieve has been everything in Texas. He played for them. He was the GM. He was the announcer when I grew up. He was still one of my favorite voices ever. So for him to... Anyway, he's one person in the Rangers organization who I'm happy about, but the curse of David Clyde continues. I am going to pull up the Rangers career leaders in wins for pitching. F4, B4.
I feel like CJ Wilson is the top guy.
The number...
That's going to be my guess.
Surprise you, but he is close. I have done this before, so it might have changed, but... So...
guys they developed, do you count Darvish? It's not really. C.J. Wilson.
Yeah.
Because there are guys who they've had that are good pitchers. Berge, Gaylord Perry, Frank Tanana.
Colby Lewis was decent for a bit.
I think Colby Lewis is your best. So
yeah.
They drafted Wilson. They drafted Lewis. I think they got Perez for his whole career. Those are your best pitchers they've ever developed.
Wow.
Oh, curse of David Clyde still lives on, and yet they won a World Series anyway with a bunch of not bargain bin, but mid-tier free agent pitchers. So that's impressive too. And hopefully that means that those guys get good money on the market.
Yeah, and I do think more teams are going to start to follow like this the model of spending that we've seen the Rangers do. We've seen the Braves do. We've seen the Phillies do in a way. I hope we're going to start to see teams spend money. Because it's worked, you know. Houston's done it. They've made in one World Series. Atlanta did it in the sense that they brought in guys on good value deals. Philly obviously handed out the mega contract to Harper and then put talent around him. They got to the World Series last year. You know, we've seen it with the Dodgers. They developed their guys, but they also put the talent around them by bringing in. I hope that we're going to start to see more teams spend money.
I think we'll see more teams spend money at times. I think the payroll will fluctuate more. Mm-hmm. As, like, the Diamondbacks decide, oh, we're going to be good for the next 3 years. Well, we're gonna juice up the team for 3 years, but then we'll take a step back. It's not necessarily going to look like the trade the team to the Suds type stuff that the A's have to do. It's going to look like we're going to give one or two stars mega deals and watch them sit on mid-tier teams while we do this all again, which I think is good for baseball with expanded playoffs, because then you'll have a team that's over the hill, like an over-the-hill gang type of guys where they won a World Series 3 years ago and most of the team's gone now, but they snuck into the playoffs anyway. Like, that's fun, I think, but expanded playoffs does mean you're running the dice, you're running the risk of a bad World Series. And I'm not going to say that's what we got, but kind of.
Yeah, I mean, we had two blowout games. We had, there were moments where it was pretty decent. Like, game one was good. Game three was okay. But, like, game two and four, and then, you know, game five was great up until the Rangers exploded. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what we get out of these expanded playoffs.
I would say game five was fun no matter what. I know some people are saying it wasn't fun for a clinching game. It was fun no matter what.
Yeah.
Game two was a bit, not dull, but there were some points at the end of the game where I was like, oh, this is like a bad regular season game in July.
Yeah.
They're just throwing pitchers at a wall.
Yeah. So, to start to wrap this up here, you're in the area. What are the vibes in the Dallas area right now? Is it still Rangers high, or has it shifted over to Dallas week? Or, I guess, Eagles week for you guys?
Eagles week, but I don't know if it's called that exactly, because the Cowboys hate the Eagles right now more than anything else, but the Niners are up there. Come on. I, as a Cowboys fan, ironically, I don't like the Niners after the last couple years.
I mean, I hate the Niners too. I think I hate the Niners more than the Cowboys right now.
They have the best coach in football and a bunch of high schoolers. Like, come on, are you kidding me? This team, and I hate it when people say that they have good players. No, they don't. They have the next Bill Belichick, and he...
Look, man, Brock Purdy is the most overrated quarterback I've ever seen.
Oh, my goodness. Again, this is not a football podcast, but anyway.
It's not, but obviously it relates to what the Dallas area is feeling. And, like, I'm kind of surprised that, like, they just won a World Series, and it's all Cowboys mood right now.
people are happy for the Rangers. It's tough for me to judge the vibes completely because I talk to a lot of people who don't like sports.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the vibe, even the people who don't like sports are like, oh, I caught off guard this morning because of what the Rangers did. So it wasn't like, oh, we're following the team all postseason. Everyone knows what's going on. Rangers is just seeping into their lives in so many back ways. It wasn't like that at all here.
Yeah.
The World Series kind of abruptly hit people who weren't paying attention. So, and yet the Cowboys, you have to know when the Cowboys are playing on Sundays, whether you want to or not, because that's the best time to get groceries, and it's just, everything revolves around them. So this high of the Rangers, I'm not going to the parade because it's in Arlington, and that's stupid. I already went to Arlington for the sole purpose of going to Rangers games so much this year that I don't want to see that town again. It's fine. It's the campus is nice. There's a very large UTA. It's fine. But anyway, it's not the same as if the Stars or the Mavs were building momentum through a year. And I wonder if that's because they're not in downtown Dallas. Because again, maybe the vibes in Fort Worth are different, because Fort Worth is a very different city.
Right.
So maybe that is different, and maybe that's just a holdover from the 60s when the two cities hated each other and refused to do anything to help the common area. So
it's so wild how close Fort Worth and Dallas are to each other. Like, you can basically see the other city from each other.
So
like it's wild. And I didn't realize how close they were. Like, it would be like Philly and Pittsburgh being that close to each other. Like, that's how it felt to me when I visited back in May.
Yeah, it's tough to exactly explain East Coast cities, but it's like, I can't think about it. It's like, would you say Trenton's big, but not that big?
No. Okay. Trenton's pretty small.
Trenton's pretty small. I thought it was.
I would say maybe Fort Worth is the size of Newark. So it's kind of like New York City and Newark looking at each other.
Yes. Yeah. It's like a AAA city, a major league city crushed together. Tacoma, Seattle, maybe. To give just a brief bit of history, since we're in a Texas themed episode, Dallas was not founded, but basically created in the 1840s, 50s, 60s. The area kind of develops then. Dallas and Fort Worth are basically equal in the 1870s. Dallas gets the railroad first, and then a panic happens, a depression. Very small, not very small, but Fort Worth doesn't get the railroad in time. Just the railroad company goes bust. So Dallas has the railroads for a couple years before they become bigger. The rivalry is born. They just talk smack to each other for the next 100 years. JFK flew from Fort Worth to Dallas because they had two separate airports. They refused to build DFW until the late 60s. Even then, they said, we're going to build it on the county line so neither one of us gets it, kind of. Like, we're going to draw a line here and split it in half type of thing. Refused to work with each other. And that's the environment that the Rangers jumped into from Washington. That's why they're in Arlington, because they said the AAA team's in Arlington because the two cities are fighting. And that's the only reason why they're in Arlington. A downtown Dallas Rangers ballpark in downtown Dallas would be so cool. So unbelievably cool. But instead, it's in a tourist trap. Anyway, that's my history rant.
Now, when the night the Rangers clinched, were people celebrating in the streets? Were okay.
In downtown Dallas,
Very good. See, I've had friends who live in other cities that their team won a championship, and everyone kind of just went on like usual. And so explaining how Philadelphia celebrates a championship or even a pennant to explaining that to people, they're like, wait, you guys do that? Like, that's weird. Like, we don't do that here. So for me, it's kind of like, what? Like, I thought every city did this, you know?
Yes.
I thought every city climbed their greased up poles, you know? But I guess we're the only ones that grease the poles.
Yeah, you're more of a European vibe in that respect.
Yeah, it's very much like a soccer vibe.
Mm-hmm. And Houston was kind of like that when the Astros won.
But yeah.
I think that was as much as we had just survived a terrible natural disaster.
Right.
More so than it was a regular thing Houston does.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I'm glad I was able to share my Texas perspectives with y'all these last couple weeks.
Yeah, it's been interesting to get it, to get the perspective. Obviously, we're going to start to, we're just going to wrap it up here. I mean, any final thoughts on the World Series, the Rangers, you know, baseball season in general, like the season's over, this is it. We've got the off season coming up.
I mean, I hope I'm back on to talk about The Sim and many other things, yes. But The Sim especially, that's kind of was preoccupied with me right now, but at some point The Sim will start to die down and it will hit me and it will suck because it's baseball season.
Yeah.
I mean, with where I've been, as you know, visiting you and everyone else, it's been a one to remember, even if the A season was one to forget. So
the 2023 season definitely has been one to remember, like especially for me as a Phillies fan. Like I can't remember a season where I've been so in love with a team and mm-hmm. the team's been so in love with the fans back. Like,
yeah, that was special.
And that really started with the Trey Turner ovation. Like that mm-hmm. whole thing, and then like Bryce Harper calling in to our local sports radio station, talking about how listening to the fans hypes them up, and it's just like Harper hitting his 300th home run. Like, just it was a special season to me. I hate, excuse me, I hate how it ended.
Yeah. You just,
I hate that I'm never going to be able to listen to Dancing on My Own again. Like, I can't listen to it anymore. It's a second place song. I hate that Nolan and Hoskins are likely leaving. And, like, these are guys that I've watched since they were in AAA. And they're both likely gone. Hoskins especially. And, like, I know a lot of people don't like Rhys Hoskins, but I love the dude.
You love him. Yeah, that's what matters.
He's not good. He's not a good first baseman, but I love the dude.
Okay, you know how many bad players I have an affinity for.
Oh,
you know I understand.
Yeah.
Art Mathias.
Yeah. It definitely feels like
you lived through a type of A season, because that type of interaction with the fans only, I feel like that only happened in Oakland. Some points, and it's not going to happen anymore, and I'm going to cry about it. But I think that that type of but also that heartbreak, because that's what baseball is.
Dude, it crushed me. Like,
oh, yeah,
and like Nick Castellanos with Liam, like that stuff was incredible. Mm-hmm. Like seeing Liam behind home plate at every game, cheering his dad on, like mm-hmm. that. Like, it's amazing how far Philadelphia came as a sports city this year and as a fan base, because like we're known for booing our players, we're known mm-hmm. for, but like we gave Alec Boehm a standing ovation last year and it turned his season around.
Mm-hmm.
We did it to Trey Turner this year, and like it just started a whole love affair with the city, and like the way that that's ending now sucks. So like I definitely had my time to mourn. I'm ready for the off season. I've already started mm-hmm. scripting out what my perfect Phillies offseason will look like, which hopefully we'll be doing an episode in the future with a round table about what everyone's perfect offseason will look like.
I don't want to talk about my perfect offseason because it's not going to happen, but I'm sorry you went through that. But at the same time, I think you and maybe even the fan base as well are stronger for it, which is so cliche to say, but it's true.
Well, we have a new young generation of Phillies fans, like my kid is now a Phillies fan, and like explaining to her, like, hey, yeah, we're not going to a parade. A parade's not happening. Here's why. And to have her experience that heartbreak was heartbreaking mm-hmm. for me.
Mm-hmm.
But now she understands fandom and what it's like to love something and that You know, no matter how hard you love something and how hard you may believe in it, it doesn't always work out. But when it does work out, it's when you least expect it.
She'll appreciate it. She'll give that gift of love. She'll pass that along, hopefully, to another generation. And it's going to make me cry. So,
yeah. So we'll wrap it up there then. So congratulations, Texas Rangers. Texas Rangers fans, Frack, thank you for joining us and providing the Texas perspective on this Rangers postseason run.
Yes, of course.
An incredible run for them. You know, I'm happy for Corey Seager. I'm happy that Jacob DeGrom's going to get a ring. But I'm ready for next season to start. I'm ready for this offseason, and I'm ready for 2024. So.
Come on. Couldn't happen soon enough. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And, we'll hit it over for the outro.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Rain Delay Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. My name is Naim. I edited this episode. I also hosted it along with Pat. And Pat was also joined by Frack in our World Series wrap-up segment. Our theme music was composed by Chuck Leese. Rain Delay Radio releases every Monday morning at 1 a.m. Central Time, let's be honest. And we will talk to you next week. The off-season's starting, and the stove's going to get hot. So we'll talk to you next. Bye. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Rain Delay Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Our theme music was composed... No, what the... What? I started with theme music?
That's weird. Started with theme music. Our theme music was produced by...
Hello, everybody. What am I doing?
By Luis.
Luis, yeah. We'll talk to you next.
We'll talk to you next. Man, this is all time. You next? You know, between my dog screaming his head off, just an all time classic.
I don't know what that was. Unlike you guys, I don't run a script on that because I just have it in my head.
I've never memorized at this point.
I've never choked it so hard as there. That was so wild.